That would be Andy Baskin. I would be Jeff Phelps. Meredith Kane's out here running the show. We're at Browns training camp, and it's done. Practice this morning. That means sitting across from us right now, taking a break from writing his story that you can read in the News Herald as he covers the Browns for the News Herald in your fifth decade of covering the team. Oh, wait a minute. Microphone up for Mr. Jeff Shadell.
I started in 1981, so...
The 80s, 90s, aughts, 10s. Whatever, you're in your fifth decade
all right.
of covering the team.
Thanks, Jeff. That was exactly the way to get him excited for today.
If you're looking for an experienced guy who's been here, done that, and knows what happens here, this is the man.
You are the man.
Jeff,
as many hot ones as we've had here this week.
Oh, my gosh. It's funny. I just got up and walked behind the tent here and walked to the facilities that are now parked right at what used to be the base of the Bill Belichick mountain out here. Remember that one?
Oh, I do remember that. And I ran it a couple times in my youth, but that was it. Glad the hill's not there anymore.
Bill put a hill out here for training purposes. Only Bill.
But he ran it, man. He ran it in those sweats, those like garbage bags.
The saran wrap garbage bag things, yeah. Those were fun. Hey, the guys practiced and tackled live today.
Yeah. That's a story, actually.
It is nowadays.
Yeah.
And the other writers give me a hard time about it because I would always ask the defensive coordinator, how can you guys get better at tackling when you don't tackle in practice?
It's a great point. I think we all we all say that on Sundays.
Yeah, right.
And what do they say?
They say, well, we thud. You know what I mean? Like, pretend to tackle. Well, then, the guy pretends to run through the tackle, right, on Sunday. And the players like it. I mean, you can't do it every day, right?
Right.
Because someone will get hurt. But I think this is good.
General overall feeling of camp, we heard, it kind of felt like they needed to raise the level of competitiveness at camp. Obviously, when you have four quarterbacks, that's inherent. But for everybody else, do you feel like the intensity is a little bit, like the desire to be better than they were last year? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I think last year was just, I think the defense thought, hey, we were great in 2023, we'll be great again in 2024. And that, of course, did not happen. And the offense was just a mess last year. And I keep saying that they tried to tailor it to Deshaun Watson, the whole program, and that just did not work. So all the players are excited to go back to what worked philosophically in 2023 when they ran the ball.
What do you think about the way the NFL is coached today, Jeff, and I mean with practices mainly, because as you mentioned, you're covering the team from 1981 on. I mean, two-a-days were a real thing.
Right.
Beating the you-know-what out of each other during practice was a real thing, and injuries seem to be maybe as prevalent then as they are now. In other words, it hasn't gotten any better, even though the workload has decreased like crazy when it comes to training
and practices.
And
I think there's been studies, Jeff, that in those times when they did two-a-days, there were fewer soft tissue injuries than there are now.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, and I understand from the player's standpoint, it'll never go back to that, but you just got tougher playing that way, two-a-days, in pads all the time, too. I remember those days out at Lakeland when Marty Schottenheim was coaching.
Just went nuts.
And they had that nutcracker drill right from the very beginning. And those are the great times because the fans were up close and there were like 3,000, 4,000.
And they're every day.
Every day. And the fans loved it. And the Browns were a good team in those days, right? So this business about all the secretive stuff and everything, I'm not buying that helps.
Well, there's no one taping practice across the street because there's no houses across
the street. Houses anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the stories that you hear after the fact of teams that were renting or buying houses across the street so they could put a camera in so they could tape all the Browns practices and never be noticed. I love how those little stories pop up.
I know, and maybe that had something to do with them not playing well all those years, but I'm not buying that one.
All right, let's talk about the quarterback situation. It's obviously the biggest story at camp. Are you counting reps? Are you writing down completions? Are you, or are you just, or is it just to me, in some ways, it just seems obvious. If Flacco's healthy, Flacco's the starter. The two young guys, we'll see what happens with Pickett.
Yeah, I would be lying if I told you I'd chart the passes. And some guys do. More power to them. I don't do that. I try to just observe who I think is playing well. And obviously Joe Flacco is the best quarterback of the three.
Is it even a race?
I don't think so.
With those three, they're two rookies. You would expect Flacco to look better.
What about the four?
We'll see when Kenny Pickett gets back. But I think the job is Flacco's to lose. Because both these guys are on one-year contracts. And maybe you do want to see what Kenny Pickett can do. But I think Flacco's looking better. And I think that Shedeur Sanders is improving. And, you know, Dillon Gabriel's a great guy, but he's 5'10 or 5'11, whatever he is. And, like, just out there today, he had a pass batted down at the line of scrimmage. And we talked to him about finding the passing lanes like Drew Brees and other shorter quarterbacks. Kyler Murray is shorter than Dillon Gabriel, as a matter of fact. But he's really got a – I think that could come with time, too. I think the important thing is, you know how coaches always say when they draft a rookie, usually it's when they draft him in the first round, we're not going to start him, we're going to let him ease his way in, and then boom, he's a starter on week one or two.
Right.
So I think the fact they have these two veterans in front of the rookies is really good for everybody.
You have a defense, Jeff, that's trying to bounce back to what it was 2 years ago, and now you've lost Jordan Hicks, and now you've lost Martin Emerson. That doesn't help any.
No, it doesn't. But I'll tell you what, Carson Schlesinger, people are going to love him right from the start.
Does he remind you of anybody?
Well, let's say another guy that got from California. He wasn't UCLA, but USC.
Clay
Matthews.
Yeah.
Because he's a smart player, and he's going to be an unselfish player. Clay Matthews would probably be in the Hall of Fame by now if he put his own statistics in front of the team's success. But like when some guys would be try to sack the quarterback, Clay would be on have the outside linebacker job, and he would set the edge, funnel the running back inside, and then Mike Johnson or Eddie Johnson would make the tackle. And so Clay doesn't get credit for that statistically, but he was integral in making the play successful.
And he was the guy who, you need me to play middle, I can go play middle.
Yeah.
You need me to play right side, left,
yeah.
Wherever they put him, he played well.
And Clay was great. And, man, when you see him today, I don't know where he sleeps, but, man, that guy, he does not age.
He doesn't. Does he?
And, no. I mean, he played from 1978 to 1993, and maybe 1996 because he finished with the Falcons. He was ageless, so I wish he weren't a lot. Man, and if they get that out of Carson Schlesinger, people will be very happy.
Let's talk about another rookie who's out of your area, especially when you read the News Herald every day. You know, Luke Floria. The story is unbelievable.
He is.
And is he going to make the team? I don't know, but I think there are a lot of people pulling for him. There are a lot of people rooting for him. And, you know, you see him out here. They're using him. It's not like it's not like he's off on the side and you're like, who's that guy? He's big plays.
Right. And he's working as a punt returner, Andy.
Right.
Right. So you don't have these guys doing that at this point in camp, even though it's fairly early in camp. OTA is okay. But when they're doing it in camp, then maybe there's a chance that he will make it as a punt returner. Because let's face it, it's not like these guys have Josh Cribbs on the team.
Right.
So, I like it. They call him Rambo.
Yeah.
They call Luke Floria Rambo because he wears that bandana. He's a great kid. And, he's from Mentor High, went to Kent. And you have to be pretty good if you get noticed at Kent State. Sorry, Jeff. But
well, the first time I heard you Kent Staters.
Yeah.
him too.
I am too. When Julian Edelman was like the first kind of comparison people were saying it earlier, like, oh, man, that's big shoes. That's big shoes.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll tell you, it would be great for him if he makes it.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
If he doesn't make the team, I will predict that he'll be on the practice squad, which is still a pretty good,
absolutely
pretty good gig, right?
Absolutely.
So especially for the story that the original story that I had read about his family in the News Herald. I was just like, wow, man, that family is super talented.
Yeah, yeah. And so
his sister.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. Yeah, it's a good family.
Jeff Shadell joining us from the News Herald, along with your great work on the Browns. You cover the other teams as well. And the Guardians looking at the trade deadline tomorrow, Jeff. Emmanuel Clase being put on leave. Did that mess anything up? Who knows? Do you expect anything of significance before tomorrow at 6 o'clock?
I think that they will trade Shane Bieber if they could get something good for him. Stephen Kwan's the other name we keep hearing about. I don't know if they're going to trade Kwan. They have to get something really good for Kwan. I don't have a problem with them trading Shane Bieber if they've concluded that they're not going to be a playoff team this year. But I want to say about that investigation. Now, I don't want anything bad, of course, to happen to Clase.
Right.
Or Luis Ortiz, for that matter. But baseball better have something on these guys. Because to me, if September 1st rolls around after the, you know, they're on leave through August 31st, if September 1st comes around and they say, well, there's nothing there, he's back with you guys.
They've trashed the season.
And right. And
maybe a big trade at the deadline.
Right. Exactly right. So either way, if there's nothing there, that's obviously very important for Clase A's future. But you're right. I mean, they could have traded. They could have gotten a lot if they wanted to.
Big,
they decided
big trade
they weren't
piece.
A playoff team.
Big trade piece.
They could have gotten a huge return on Clase A because he is not only is a great closer, but he's under club control through 2028.
Don't you think they have to have some kind of information that they think is valid, Jeff, to have gone ahead and sent these guys home for a while during a pennant race with a team that's trying to make it? That's the thing I keep going back to. Because
right.
I have felt the same way you did. Man, if this turns out to be nothing, and then I think, but that's not what Major League Baseball usually does.
Right. And you know, I am not saying he's guilty at all.
Of anything. We don't know. They haven't
shared
anything.
Either guy.
Right,
yeah.
Right, either guy. But I, yes, Jeff, I mean, you don't just do it to say, hey, let's go fishing here and see what happens.
But let's flip the coin. Let's say they find nothing. What's the repercussion?
It'd be stunning.
I mean, we're a lot of angry fans here. An angry front office should be angry ownership in Cleveland. But that's it. Like, I don't know where you're going to go.
Right.
I mean, Houston was cheating
and
winning, and now there's
and they got to keep the World Series trophy.
Yeah, I mean,
the commissioner said it's a piece of metal, right, or something like that. I mean, so we'll see. But and I tell you, there is something there though. That's the end of his could be the end of his career.
Right.
And
both of those guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And for that to happen to Clase, who when he would be a free agent, I think he'd be 30 years old or something like that. So he still would have a lot of good years left. And man, that dude would have been able to cash in on a huge payday. But we'll see.
And his two biggest paydays with the Guardians are the next 2 years, because that's when his salary jumps a little bit.
Well, especially in 26 and 27, right? He
$10 million, I think.
Right, and they have two
team
club
options. Yeah.
Just going back to Kwan for a second, too. And Jeff and I have been talking about this since the beginning of the show. Like, trading Kwan, they've got to come back with some. So another team has got to come back with a major load.
Right.
Because Kwan fits the profile of what this organization has been
exactly
for years
right.
and been successful.
Right.
And so the question we said, who's driving the Kwan rumors? It's probably not the Guardians. It's either his agent or someone saying something, or other teams are trying to put pressure on the Guardians to say, well, everyone else thinks it's going to happen. But I don't see the Guardians front office folding under
that.
Where is it coming from?
I think a lot of trade talk in all these leagues is agent-driven. You're right, Andy.
Right.
And I do not see, like you just said, I think the Guardians would have to be overpaid to trade him. You cannot trade him for a shortstop who looks really good in Double A, right?
Right.
You do not need that trade. And if you get a right fielder, but then what do you do with, say you do get a right fielder who could play now, then where does that leave Chase DeLauder, right? So I don't know what, unless you trade him for a, you're not going to get a starter for him. I don't know what you do for him, right? Can you get a catcher who could hit the ball consistently? Now, Bo Naylor's hitting the ball a little better than he had.
His swings look better, hasn't
it? Yeah.
Do you think that their game plan changed when all this Class A stuff dropped?
I think it did.
Yeah.
But even with that, you have to look at, now you have to beat the teams you're playing, right?
Right.
But they're still, it's hard to get around the fact that they are 21-37 against teams with winning records. You're not going to be able to play the Rockies and the White Sox and the Orioles the rest of the season. Although that, you know, their schedule is much easier than it was when they went through that train and, you know, all those good teams in June, right?
Yeah.
But
Jeff, with that stat in mind that you just said, that's why I've been reluctant to try and improve this team for this year, because I don't know if one or two guys is going to turn this into a playoff juggernaut. That's why I'd be more tempted, and I know people don't want to hear this. Hang on to what good prospects you might have that you might have to send out in a trade to rent a bat or something like that, and go get them next year.
Yeah.
You know, and take your best shot this year, certainly. Take your best shot. But, man, I just can't see giving up guys that they might think are good prospects to bring in guys who might be able to help this year.
Right. And, you know what, I think a great statistic would be to go back and figure out how many rentals helped the team win a championship. So how many teams are
CC Sabathia, the best one ever.
Right.
That's all I can think of. That was the first name I thought.
Yeah, that's a good one. But, I mean, a lot of times, wouldn't you agree, that teams get these rentals and they give up prospects.
Right, doesn't work.
And it doesn't work.
No, I would agree with that. Last thought, Browns 3-14, Jeff Shedell joining us last year. You know, I have always believed, okay, that was last year. A lot of things can change and fortunes can change in a hurry. How can this team do this year?
I'll tell you what, if I didn't cover the team, I would bet on the over.
Really?
Five and a half is the over-under for them on wins. I would bet the over. I see these guys could win, I'll say, 7 or 8 games.
Which is a nice improvement over 3.
What do they have to do in the first 6?
You know, even if they go 3-3 would be great.
Right.
But, even if they went 2-4.
That's tolerable, yeah.
And, you know, they play well against the Bengals, right?
They do.
So, We'll see what happens. The Ravens are going to win the division. I'll be surprised if they do not. But I think the Browns will be better than people think, because the defense, I think, will be maybe not as great as 2023, but I think it will be better than last year. And I think going back to this run-first offense is going to be important. Now, of course, they need Joe Flacco. He doesn't have to be as great as he was in December of 23, but he or Kenny Pickett have to
compliment. Be at least,
right. And so we'll see. But yeah, I think the Browns will surprise some people.
Thank you for letting us drag you out of the air conditioning to come join us here outside.
Hey, thanks for having me. I always love on with you guys.
We love
Jeff Shedell, News Herald. You can read him in the News Herald. He has great coverage of the
Man
Browns
for
and
all
the other
seasons.
Teams. That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. We're at Browns training camp, and it's over for the day. But it was fun.
It was fun.
The guys tackled.
They went live today.
They did some live.
That's the story.
Went live. Put up the banner.
We'll
went
do it
live. Did a little tackling, which is, as Jeff Shedell rightfully says, I always ask defense coordinators, how are guys going to get better at tackling if you don't tackle?
How many times on a Sunday have you asked yourself that? When you camper during the preseason that they're not really tackling, how do you get better at tackling? But then you got to weigh that out with, how do I not want to get my guys hurt? I just don't think you can live that way. Football players are football players. But
Andy, Martin Emerson's out for the season.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Nobody touched him.
You're right.
Nobody touched him. I told you I had a couple of training camp memories for you.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Not to go too far down memory road. But
here we go.
There are a couple of things about training camp that have always stuck out to me.
Okay.
And these never go away. You're going to like them.
All right, here
ready?
We go. Is this a list?
No. Young Kent State student.
Is it a list?
Young Kent State student covering Browns training camp at Kent State University.
I remember it well.
And, you know, things were much more casual back in the day.
Oh, yes.
Right? So I'm in the locker room, and I happened to walk around the corner, and I had already checked with their director of public relations, a gentleman named Kevin Byrne, who was here a very, very long time.
And then with Baltimore.
And then went to Baltimore with the franchise. And mm-hmm. Kevin, great guy, St. Ed's grad. And I had asked him, hey, am I allowed to talk to players and like Brian Sipe? And he went, sure, go. So I'm walking through the locker room. It's almost empty. Like, there's nobody there.
Right.
And it wasn't an open locker room. You know how, like, oh, locker rooms now are open. You can see a lot of guys.
Yeah.
You're kind of like walking through lockers.
This is at Dick Stadium?
Yeah. Okay. I turn the corner, and there's Brian Sipe.
Uh-oh.
And nobody's near him. And I...
Should I do it?
I introduced myself to him, and I said...
Mr. Sipe?
Mr. Sipe, blah, 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 blah. And I said, can I talk to you? And he looked at me kind of funny, like, I don't want to do this, so maybe I'll get the... And he said, did Kevin say it was okay? And I said, he did. And he went, okay, great.
Oh, wow.
So I talked to Brian Sipe. So that was...
What'd you learn that day?
I don't know. I'll tell you, why are we smarter?
Oh, okay.
There was another time. So that was like my first experience with training camp with the Browns. And it was cool being, you know, a young, right. stupid college kid. And I didn't know. Most interesting things I'll ever remember in covering sports happened at Lakeland with Browns training camp.
Good.
With one of my favorite guys who ever played for the Browns. And I'm watching training camp. I'm on the sidelines. And they're going. I think Bud Carson was the coach. And just watching. Here they go. They're doing their thing. And all of a sudden I look, and offensive lineman Ricky Bolden mm-hmm. had taken his helmet off. And he was going up to his teammates and shaking hands. In practice. In the middle of practice.
I'm done. That's what that says to me.
I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, what is Ricky doing? And Ricky's a great guy. He was just awesome. And all of a sudden he walks over to the sidelines. And I'm watching him. And he just walks right past us. And we go, hey, Ricky. Hey, guys. Walks into the locker room and goes in.
Okay.
And he's smiling. And we're thinking, what just happened here? Well, after practice ends, we go inside, and there's Ricky sitting on a table, beaming. Fellas, I just retired.
In the middle of practice?
I just retired. How do you feel? I am awesome. This is great. I can't wait to get on with my life's work. In the middle of practice, the guy takes his helmet off, shakes hands with various teammates, and books. And then afterwards, sat around to wait and talk to us about it. It was awesome.
I don't understand. Did he actually,
had enough?
He started practice that day, and then
it
he
was
just
in
decided
the,
to retire.
It was in the middle of practice.
So don't you think, was it Ernie then, or was it?
Ernie, of course, he was the GM.
Don't you think that he probably had a conversation with Ernie before?
I don't know.
Had talked about him retiring.
I don't know. But
and he said, I want to give it one more go.
In the middle of practice, the guy walks off the field and retires. It was awesome.
Is that the same? Although you said he left in a happy way.
Oh, he was beaming.
You know how they say the ultimate way sometimes if you don't like where you're working or you don't like your boss, how to leave a job. You know,
he had nothing but good things to say about the Browns and football and everything else. I've had enough. I'm getting on with my life work.
That's
and
insane.
I believe Ricky became a minister.
Oh, good for
if
him.
If I'm not mistaken.
Good for him.
And then I've got one other for you. Our first real look at Bill Belichick as head coach.
Okay.
He's at Lakeland.
Right.
Okay. His first training camp was at Lakeland. And there's a little media room that's set up with a little stand. What do you call those things? Podium. Mm-hmm. And so Bill comes up to the podium and he starts his first press conference. And he drops the word compete. And then dropped the word compete. And then dropped the word competitive. And then dropped the word compete. I counted them up afterwards. He said the word compete like 35, 40 times in like a 10-minute thing. It's like, okay, I think Bill just set the tone for what he's looking for out of his first training camp.
Oh, I thought he wanted the media.
Compete.
I thought he wanted
compete.
The media to go toe-to-toe on this.
No, it's like, what do you think about the wide receivers? I'm looking for good competition at the wide receiver spot, and I think it's going to be a really competitive position for him. And he just kept going and going and going.
I just remember.
And I had to laugh. I thought it was great.
Training camp memories for me are all based on, we didn't. I went to a sports camp all summer and it was at Heights High, and it was run by the great Larry Hoon, Hoon's Platoon. Shout out to anyone whoever wrestled for him or his son, Adam, at Menor, and is still around town and still coaching. And those guys, what a great sports family the Hoon family is. In fact, the grandfather, the softball field in Twinsburg is named for him. So, but, you know, they went out of their way in these sports camps that we would go to that we always got to make great trips. And I remember going to – we went to Kent State 1 year, which probably would have been like early 80s. And then out at Lakeland, I remember going out there. And, like, we did all these great trips. And I think that, you know, you talk about your fandom and how things grow and why we're all Browns fans or why we're all Indians Guardians fans or why we're all Cavs fans. And I think all that starts when you're in those real formative years. And, man, I was so lucky to be able to go to a camp that would take us to all these things. I hear these kids cheering all the time in the background, and I think, well, you know, amazing. I'll never forget the first time I took my son out here, and he was just, like, in awe because, you know, most people don't get to see these guys up close and personal. And if you get a chance to come out to camp, you see them up close, and they're like giants. They're like Hollywood characters, and you just don't realize that. I mean, we talk about them every day, and, you know, they're part of our business world, but, you know, when you're a kid, man, these guys are larger than life. And I when I see these kids out here, it just reminds me of me when I was little.
There's a gentleman who writes for ESPN who we talk about when he puts out some great content, and he always does, and his name is Bill Barnwell. He put up a story today, Andy, and I it's too long to just, you know, read unless you like got a half an hour, because he does an in-depth thing on every team. And the premise of what Bill wrote is fascinating, and Browns fans may or may not like it. NFL trade tiers, which players are worth a first-round pick? He went back and looked at NFL rosters, current rosters, and said, which guys on this team, and he did every team, would you trade a first-round pick for? His thoughts on the Browns might surprise you. They're coming up on Baskin and Phelps. We're at Browns training camp. Get ready. Chris Rowe is going to join us at 1 o'clock, Browns preseason television play-by-play guy. Andrew Berry is just coming out with Peter John Baptiste, who is the director of communications, vice president. Peter's wearing a sweatshirt. I mean, what the hey? Andy, you did a great job adjusting the fan so that everybody has a little bit of a breeze. But Peter's wearing a sweatshirt.
Yes.
What the hey, man?
Well, I think it might be cold for him out here.
Why?
Because isn't he from the Caribbean?
I don't know.
Yes.
He's in a long-sleeve sweatshirt. He's an animal. It's the way to do it right there. Chris Rose is going to join us coming up at 1 o'clock. Bill Barnwell, ESPN, wrote something, Andy, and I think it's really Bill's work. If you haven't looked at it, go look at it because, man, it's so in-depth, it's silly. But he went through every NFL team, and he always all of his work is in-depth silly. NFL trade tiers, which players are worth a first-round pick? So, in other words, if you're looking at another team's roster, who would you actually give up a first-round pick for?
Yeah, that's interesting.
I say this in a world where I've always thought draft picks are so overrated and overinflated, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
And I'd rather have football players. And if I give up a first-round pick to get that guy, I get that guy. That doesn't matter. Barnwell went through and
I haven't seen it. Can I guess how many we have?
Yeah, you can in a minute.
Okay.
For instance, for the Cincinnati Bengals, and he divided them into kind of different levels, 4 first-round picks and more. One guy, Joe Burrow.
Hmm.
He had Joe Burrow in that category. 2 first-round picks and
more.
Oh,
I see. Okay.
Jamar Chase.
Okay.
1 first-round pick. He had T. Higgins, Amarius Mims, offensive tackle, and Shamar Stewart, who was just drafted. Okay, so he had 5 guys there, and then he said, just missing out, Trey Hendrickson. With the Browns, he had the highest rated category was first round pick and more.
Miles. It's easy.
He had one other guy in there.
Denzel. That's the only other person I could really think of.
Mason Graham.
Or Mason. Okay, I'll give you that.
Isn't that interesting?
More than 1 first round pick?
He had first round pick and more.
Huh.
Listed for Mason Graham and Miles Garrett. And no other Brown he had worthy of a first-round pick in a trade. He said, just missing out, Denzel Ward. He said, still one of the league's top corners, but teams just don't want to spend significant draft capital for even great corners after they have signed veteran extensions.
Huh.
So in other words, they want that sweet spot. You're a corner, you're on a rookie deal. We're going to get the most out of you that we can. And then, you know, somebody else can sign you to that extension, and we're not giving up a number one for you. And he said, Cleveland has a pair of talented young corners alongside. And those guys, Greg Newsome, Martin Emerson, and then he says Emerson injured his left Achilles earlier in the week. He said, would the Browns land more for wide receiver Jerry Jeudy? And he said, not necessarily. He said, but if Jeudy can keep going and repeats his 2024, he said his contract would be one of the best wide receiver bargains in the league. And, of course, when Andrew Berry
that
signed
sounds right.
Jerry
yeah,
Jeudy, yeah, it seemed to be a little under market. But if I'm Jerry Jeudy, I jump at that. And he did, and now he's, you know, in theory, set for life. And then performed like it last year. So that was really good. It was really well done. But I thought that was a really interesting piece by Bill Barnwell.
And so for
the Steelers.
But Judy's value now. So when he came out in 2020, he was the 15th pick overall.
Yeah, out of Alabama.
And not to steal an old bit, but ahead of behind the 15th pick in the first round. Would you say he's worthy of he's behind that 15th overall pick?
Without question. It took Jerry a while to find himself, and he's always shown flashes, and I think the best year he's ever had was last year. But now he's got to stack years together. You know?
Yeah.
If he wants to be a number one wide receiver, I think he's, compared to other teams in the NFL, he's a fringe wide receiver at number one.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, he's not Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson. You know, he's not Malik Nabers, but he's our guy. And he was pretty good last year.
He was a Pro Bowler. I mean,
yeah,
I'll take it.
He was pretty good last year. And hopefully he can stack another year like that on top of it.
If he does, then he comes closer to the value that he actually was when Denver drafted him.
Yeah, I would say that's fair, Andy. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, Pittsburgh, he had guys that would be worthy of a first-round pick in a trade. He had five guys. You know, and I don't think it... I don't know how it doesn't have some kind of a reflection on the overall talent on the roster. But I think the best rosters, and I think obviously the Browns roster doesn't have as much talent as some of the other teams in the division, certainly, and certainly in the league. But, you know, you've got to stack talent on that team. And the first-round picks they had to give up for Deshaun hurts that some, without
Jimmy
question.
Brought that up yesterday.
Well,
and he's right.
He is right, but it's not overwhelming. You know what I mean? You lost three guys there. Or possibly, you know, you could have traded a first-rounder down and picked up a couple of other guys. That could have happened. It's just you've got to stack your team with talent and then see where it goes.
I'm just trying to think of the first-rounders on the team right now that were you know what I'm saying? Like, all the first-rounders that the Browns have on this team.
It's Andy,
Njoku, I'm just thinking off the top of my mind. Njoku, worth it. Garrett, worth it, obviously. And Ward, worth it. And then Newsom.
Yeah, I think Greg was a lower first-round pick. I would think that he's worthy of that right now. But you've told me a story, and we all know this concept. Your dad told you something one time when you drove. You had a car.
Yes.
And you were driving off. You just got a new car. It was either you or your dad.
Oh, I said
it
to
my
dad.
And you were driving off the lot.
Yes, I remember
And the line was what?
We were at a car dealership on the west side on Lorraine Road, and they had doors that you could drive out. And the car that I had just purchased, like the first time I bought it was my first Ford Explorer. I'll never forget it. And they put the car in the showroom so you could drive it out. And as we walked out, maybe it was my dad that said it to me, because I think I said it to someone.
It was your dad who
said
it to you.
My dad said it to me. And
you weren't wise enough. You were too giddy about having a new car.
There was no way. I was like, I can't believe I'm driving this car. This is my car now. And as we drove out of the showroom and went through where the doors were, where you normally would walk in, he goes, can you feel it? And I go, what, Dad? He goes, can you feel it? And I said, no, what is it? He goes, it's depreciation. And I'm like, what?
And you know what?
He goes, the car isn't worth more now that you took it out on the street than it was when it was sitting in the showroom.
And that's what happens with first-round picks in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think a majority of first-round picks, some guys soar, and they become guys, especially depending on the position they play, quarterback, who become guys who, if you want them, you got to give up multiple first-round picks. But other guys, okay, you were out, you were a first-round pick, you played 2 years, great. If we wanted to trade for you, we're going to offer a third. That's never made a whole lot of sense to
me.
Because, again, I value players more than I value picks. And I would trade, I've said this going into this draft, every draft. If I could, if I was an NFL GM, I would trade every fifth, sixth, seventh round pick for a player. Just go trade them for a player and get somebody in here who can actually has shown that they can play in the league.
Sure.
Because most fifth and sixth round picks aren't going to have any career of significance. Let me trade for a fifth-year guy.
Until we talk about Shedeur Sanders, right?
Hi, I'm Andy Baskin, bringing you right back, folks.
I'm just saying, you brought it up. How often do we see
it? I said most.
Yeah.
I'm leaving everything else up, open for opportunity. I sure hope it happens. But, you know, most of those guys drafted that late don't make it. I'd rather trade for a veteran who could come in and play 3 years for me. That'd be great. And help. Be more helpful to my team.
Agree. Of the guys the Browns have drafted, how many fifth-rounders or higher are listed as starters right now?
Are you asking me off the top of my head?
Yeah, I'm asking off the top of your
head. You tell me.
One, Jerome Ford, fifth-rounder.
Okay.
That took Nick having to leave.
Ronnie Hickman undrafted, though. He might be your starting safety.
Right. No, I'm just – oh, I see what you're saying. No, I'm talking about actually guys
that
were
drafted.
Actually drafted. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's a tough way to go. It really is, and that's what this team's going to have to deal with. Next week, they'll be practicing in Carolina against the Panthers and then play the Panthers in a preseason game. Andy, I can't wait to see these guys on the field because against Carolina, we'll see a practice. That's all well and good. But once you get to a game, we're going to see Dylan Gabriel on the field. We're going to see Shedeur Sanders on the field. And I can't wait to see those two young quarterbacks. And I think one of several things is going to happen. If one of them looks good and the other one doesn't, oh, man, the chirping is going to be that guy is the next coming of, you know, Brian Sipe, Bernie Kosar.
Right.
And the other guy is going to
be. Yeah, you brought up that great memory. When was Brian drafted?
Late 70s.
No, I mean, what round?
Oh, 17th. I think 13th
yeah.
round. I think
like
13th
crazy.
Round.
Round that doesn't exist.
They don't even have that anymore.
Yes.
But I think if one of those guys shines, then they're going to be, you know, the leading candidate to be the next Brian Sipe. If neither one, then everybody's just going to turn and look at Joe Flacco and say, okay, what do you got? What are you going to do? As long as Kenny Pickett's not there. You know, I'm curious to see if Kenny's able to come back and play next week. You know, he's out this week with that hamstring issue. If he's on the practice field, you know, for Carolina, that changes things a little bit.
Could you imagine a general manager? He was a 13th round, 330th pick in the draft. Could you imagine?
I said 13th. After I said 17th.
Yeah.
I said 17th.
Could you imagine a general manager now trying to say, okay, well, we're going to start them?
Brian was with the team for like 3 years before he played.
Right.
You know, that used to be the way it went.
But no one's willing to let a guy sit for that long now.
Well, you
no
better let a 13th round pick sit. If you're throwing that guy out there, you got issues.
Can you
Andy.
Imagine the scrutiny a general manager would get today if even after a season they decided, you know what, we're going to start our 13th round pick? Are you kidding?
Andy, you're going to get that if you start a 6th round pick.
Or a 5th round
Belichick
pick.
Belichick did. You know, when Bledsoe was ready to come back from injury.
Yeah.
And he stuck with Brady.
I know.
He caught grief.
Sometimes this game doesn't make sense. And sometimes we pigeonhole and box guys into a spot that we think they should be or where we want to put them. And I just sometimes I wonder. But the great players always seem to figure out a way to get around it, and hopefully they get drafted high.
I hate to even
think. Schlesinger story is amazing to me. That's
well,
one
yeah,
of the reasons why. Because here was a walk-on in college. Now all of a sudden
and really didn't play a whole lot at UCLA as a linebacker and excel until his senior year.
And now he's calling plays for the defense as a rookie? Hasn't even seen one NFL game.
Is an NFL rookie who didn't play much in college. I mean, the one thing I think people forget, and the main reason I think people forget it is a valid reason. We see pro football, basketball, baseball players who are absolutely the top of their professions and really, really good. And most of these guys, Andy, have been studs their entire life in athletics. Most of them. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
You know, the best guy in your high school, best guy in your junior high, when they were playing Little League ball, they were the best guy playing Little League.
Maybe sometimes.
Sometimes it takes a while for a guy to develop. And that just happens sometimes with people. And maybe that was with Carson Schlesinger.
I can tell you the great equalizer for the kids that are 7, 8, 9, 10 years old.
It's called puberty.
It is called puberty.
Yeah.
And anybody that's buying stock on a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, and they see how they dominate because sometimes they're bigger than other kids. Somehow or another, things start to roll around 14, 15, 16. And you're like, oh.
My buddy Tom, we were coaching Little League baseball together. And, you know, we had a team of little guys, and we're up against some great big team. And it was right around that age. And he just looked at me and said, puberty is the great equalizer.
It is.
And it's amazing. But most of the guys you see at the pro level have been great their entire, you know, high school on. Schlesinger took some time, and that's okay. There are guys that happens with. Chris Rose calls play-by-play for the Browns during the preseason on their television network. He also works for the NFL Network. He's hosting American Gladiators. He's done BattleBots, everything else. Chris is coming up with us next right here on Baskin and Phelps.